And good evening. It is Intuitive Soul Radio with your host, Laura Houston. And this evening, we have Robert Bruce with us, who is the author of Astral Dynamics, Practical Psychic Self-Defense, and Energy Work, among others. Welcome, Robert. Usually, we begin by talking about your journey, and I'd like you to talk to us about, you know, sort of what sort of got you here. You have an extensive knowledge base of information that I have been privy to, which is your book, Energy Work, as well as your book, Astral Dynamics, and the online course that you teach. And it is full of incredible information and extraordinarily extensive. So how did you get involved with this?
I've been having out-of-body experiences since I was 4 years old. I just started having them when I was about four, floating through the house, you know, spontaneous OBEs, and I had them all through my childhood. And when I was about 16, my parents got involved with the spiritualist church, and I was exposed to various material. And the subject of astral projection came up when I was around about 20, I suppose. And I remember doing it vividly many, many, many times. And so I worked on learning how to do it, and that took me several months. And I went on from there. I got involved with the local spiritualist church, and next I opened up a healing center, and it just sort of flowed from there. And skipped forward many years, until I was in my mid-30s when a lot of heavy phenomena happened to me and around me, and that drew me back into this in a much more robust way of actually doing things rather than reading about them. And that changed me. I've written about a bit about that in my book, Practical Psychic Self-Defense, what happened to me then. And after that, I was I got a message from my higher self, you might call it, very clearly that I needed to write, and so I started writing. And which was a bit of a shock, because I finished grade eight reasonably well, and so I had a lot to learn. And then I produced my first book, Astral Dynamics.
That was your first book?
Yeah, and it's been quite a journey since then. I've written five, six books since then.
Wow. Now, you say in the material as well as, you know...
Sorry, I can barely hear you.
Okay, you say in your material that it is really important to undertake a spiritual practice. Can you talk about that?
Yes, well, if you live your life on default and don't do a spiritual practice, and a spiritual practice can be a meditation every day, a half-hour meditation, anything like that. Or you might take up yoga and meditation or something. If you don't do that, we tend to get consumed by our lives. Life takes over and we go from one thing to the other, and before we know it, life is over. Because life will fill your time, and children and come along, and grandchildren and work just consumes it, and you blink and it's over. And you can go through your entire life without having hardly any contact with the spiritual. And so if you start earlier by having a spiritual practice, you keep in touch with that, and you then have the opportunity of taking it further, of developing spiritually, of growing, and so it's a big help.
And what would you consider a spiritual practice?
Meditation, at the very basic level, just the daily level meditation. Of any kind, of any tradition, I would also recommend some energy work, which I teach in my book called Energy Work. That is invaluable to you combine that with meditation and everything starts to work.
It certainly seems like a complete guide that you've been developing to assist us to create that kind of practice and to assist us to do, you know, the kind of work that you've been doing, which since you were four, that sounds amazing.
What I teach is I'm driven to do this. I mean, I didn't just sit down and think about what can I write about. I want to write a book. It was I was very compelled to write the works I've written, and each one has been inspirationally based. I mean, I will often start writing a book that I've chosen to write, and within a couple of weeks, I'll get dragged off that onto another project of what wants to be written. My books have a life of their own, and they want to be written.
Right. So you recommend for us to observe our thoughts, actions, and words, and to ask three questions before saying anything, which is it true? Is it kind? Is it necessary?
Wise words. I learned those from my mother.
Aww.
And they're very, very apt if you apply them to life. It's a good general guidance in life, because often if you don't answer those questions, we're running on ego, and it's not not in a spiritual sense. And those things help you to look at what you're saying, because often we live our lives based on programming, the programming we've learned from our child, hereditary from our childhood and as we grow up, and we're not actually thinking, we're not observing ourselves of what we're saying, we're not deciding to say things, we are just reacting according to our programming.
Mm-hmm.
So those questions help to differentiate between what our programming, our ego, our pain body is dictating us to do and say, and what we're actually choosing to say on a spiritual level.
So you started with, you know, out-of-body experiences. So your book, that certainly what we're discussing tonight, is about, you know, astral projection and your course, Astral Dynamics. Why do you think we are so fascinated with this? What do you think is, you know, the purpose of being able to do this?
Everybody does this, no exceptions. Whenever you sleep, you leave your body. You could say you project from your body. We actually split up. There is something called the mind split effect, and it happens every time you fall asleep or enter an altered state of consciousness. You can be fully awake in an altered state of consciousness and have an astral projection in progress, which often happens during meditation unnoticed. And your dream mind can also become active at the same time, simultaneously. So there are two or three aspects of you functioning simultaneously. Unfortunately, the natural mind, our brain, the way we naturally store memories is to store memories in a linear 3D way. One memory stream, what we're doing, is normally recorded. Now, when you've got two or three memory streams, two or three of you recording experience memories independently, after that experience there, the mind generally only downloads one copy, and the strongest memory is the one that's usually remembered.
Hmm.
Takes a bit of a mind flip to get your head around that. I've done I wrote an article which is actually a part of the new book I've just done. I've just finished a second edition of Astral Dynamics, my first book, which will be released in the fall in September. And that is my best yet. It's not just a revised version of Astrodynamics. I completely rewrote it. Hmm. And it is the book, Astrodynamics, you could say, should have been in 1999 when I first wrote it. I've added a lot more content, cut it down a lot. And my explanations in there are much clearer because I have a lot more experience to back it, more experience as a writer in explaining it. So everything's a lot clearer. One example, I posted a piece on my blog, which is blog.astrodynamics.com, a couple of days ago, about the nature of astral projection, and particularly the question, the ongoing debate about whether astral projections and lucid dreams occur as an internal mental process in the mind, or as an external mental process outside the mind and the body. And that first begs the question of what is the human mind? Now, because if you're going to leave it, you have to know what it is and where it is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you cannot take your finger and point to where your mind is. You just can't do it. I mean, it is scientifically known the mind and the memories are not contained within the substance of the brain. They're just not there. You can remove, for example, 50% of the human brain in an operation called a hemispherectomy, which is often done for chronic epilepsy and other things, and you will not lose any memories. Doesn't matter which side you remove. And if you have this operation before you finish passing through puberty in the around about 20-ish, you will recover completely with maybe a slight limp.
Wow.
But you won't lose any memories. And there's been scientific experiments done with lab rats and that, where they've trained a 100 lab rats and then removed a little piece of each of their brains. And over 100 lab rats, they've removed the entire brain. But all of the lab rats remember the task that they learned before the operation. That study was published in The Lancet in the mid-90s. So there's a lot of evidence to show that they don't know where the memories are stored in the brain. They do not appear to be stored in the substance. But now, with the mind, I mean, the mind is, at the very least, contained within your entire body. As a lot of body workers will know, when you're working on a person's body, by touching them in particular parts of their body, and you will develop an intuitive sense of what this is. It may be an acupuncture needle, it may be massage movement, it may be anything. Mm-hmm. You touch a person in a certain part of their body, and it could be on the lower side of the lower back. You will trigger emotional releases in people. You will trigger suppressed memories. All kinds of things will be triggered by touching people in certain ways. And my work on the core image work, which I deal with in practical psyche self-defense, also supports that memories are stored in physical locations in the flesh of the human body, not necessarily in the brain.
Hmm.
So you put all this together. Now, the mind appears to be a field of energy surrounding the body and permeating the body. Now, most of our memories appear to be stored in the substance of the physical body. But the mind as a field extends out like any energy being broadcast around the body and is broadcast out for a considerable distance. I mean, I think they have detected the electromagnetic activity of the heart, for example, at 50 yards distance with sophisticated technology. And as an energy, it will extend out like a torch. It will dissipate, but it doesn't entirely stop. If you turn on a flashlight and you point it up into space at night, that flashlight beam will go on forever. It will dissipate, but it will never actually stop. Now, it appears to be that the human mind is a field of energy that extends out at great distances and possibly permeating the entire universe on different levels. And so if you take this to account, that we're a field of energy broadcasting out at vast distances, this makes a bit of sense out of experiments in telepathy and experience in empirical knowledge in telepathy, precognition, remote viewing, and various things like that. There's been a lot of work done studying those things, and distance does not appear to be a factor in those things. I mean, people, you will often get intuitive psychic impressions about things happening to people you're connected with the other side of the planet. And so what I'm building up here is, if mind is a field and all minds are fields of energy broadcasting out, then we are all connected on a mind level. We're all intermeshed like different frequencies of radio and television broadcasts, all occupying the same space. So as you have a very large field around you, let's say at the very least occupying the planet and the solar system, when you are leaving your body in an astral projection or lucid dream or precognitive dream, you are not actually leaving your mind. You are moving your point of conscious awareness within your own mental field. So you're not actually separating from it. You're just shifting around within your own field of consciousness, which extends out to great distances.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, it's a fascinating thing. The blog article is 600 words. It's worth reading. I've laid it out fairly succinctly. And this is a section of my new book, Astrodynamics, coming out in fall, where in this version of the book I go a lot more into working with the higher self and connecting with the higher self as it relates to astral projection, lucid dreaming, than I did before. And which is very exciting work. I mean, with your higher self, when you're talking about your higher self, I'm talking about source energy. I'm talking about the collective consciousness. I'm talking about the inner daemon, the monad. You might call this God or source. Your higher self is within you, is within everybody, the great observer within you. And the great observer within all of us sits back and observes our life in minute detail. And it normally won't make its presence known unless it's actively sought, which is a part of doing a regular spiritual practice, of course, as I mentioned earlier. It's a part of getting in touch with that divine aspect of you. But with your higher self, it is within you and a part of you, but you can't take your finger and point to where source is. You can't point to where your higher self is, where source is. And you also cannot take your finger and point to where it's not, which is an important point. Because if you can't point to where it is not, then that means it is absolutely inside of you, inside of everything around you and every person around you and every animal around you. It is everywhere. It's global, universal. You can't leave it. It relates to the field of mind, which is an example at a different level. We extend out. Now, as we are, you are your higher self. You are enmeshed intimately with your higher self, which spans the universe. And when you start pushing yourself out like this to think about these things, you start to understand how the law of attraction works. For manifestation in the secret. You start to understand how that works, because if you are connected with everything, then your mind and your intentions and your needs are also expressed and spread out at vast distances throughout the universe, interacting with everybody else's point of consciousness and thoughts. So when you try to manifest something, of course, it spreads out on all dimensional levels for vast distances, and it affects everyone and everything around you. And this is how the universe conspires to bring about whatever it is you're trying to manifest.
Hmm. And so how does astral projection assist us with that?
Sorry, I missed that.
How does astral projection assist us with connecting to our higher self and in our manifesting?
When you, your higher self is far, far more receptive and proactive on the astral level. Now, this is why when you do affirmations, which is a part of the manifestation process, using verbal affirmations spoken aloud rather than silently, a verbal affirmation is like 100 times more powerful than a silent affirmation. Because what happens when you speak the words, you vibrate the throat center in the base of your throat where your voice box is. That vibrates and activates your throat chakra, the energy center in your throat, which is tuned into the astral level, and it broadcasts your voice on the astral level. Now, experience with astral projection and lucid dreaming and dreaming. Lucid dreaming and astral projection, two of them, have consistent factors in them that demonstrate that there is something at work there which you can connect with your higher self and observe its interactions with it in those levels. If you astral project, for example, or have a lucid dream and you come out of your body and it's dark or you have vision problems, you might find it is dark or like out of focus, like you've got bad glasses on, you can't see anything. You might be squinting through one eye very badly out of focus. Now, if you make the command, speaking verbally in the astral or the lucid dream, and you say, give me sight now, you make a command, or clarity now, or light now, give me light, you will find 99% of the time, it's very reliable, the light will suddenly appear around you. Your vision will suddenly clarify. All of a sudden, you can see clearly. And further to this, if you are in the astral and you've got your light and your vision's okay, if you want to go somewhere, if you want to visit somebody, for example, if you're in Canada, in Toronto, if you come out of your body and say, I'd like to visit Robert Bruce, make a command. Clearly, say, take me to Robert Bruce. You will find a giant hand will take hold of you. It's quite noticeable. And a force will grip you, and it will start moving you. It will move you through the astral. And if you keep your intention, your focus upon me, it will take you directly to me. Now, if on the way, on your journey, if you break your focus and you look at an interesting tree, it will instantly drop you next to that tree. And you can feel this in the background, this well-meaning, loving, understanding intelligence. And it's, oh, you want to look at the tree? There you go. And it'll put you down by the tree. And you look at the tree. Now, if you restate your command again, take me to Robert Bruce, the hand will grip you and say, oh, okay, off we go. And you can do that a dozen times. It doesn't matter. If you break your focus of where you want to go, you'll be dropped there to look at the tree, to look at the building, to look at this interesting rock. And you restate your command. Oh, off you go again. Nothing's too much trouble. And this illustrates not only the actions of the higher self, direct actions in astral projection and lucid dreams, showing how active it is on those levels, which applies to how the affirmations work verbally. But it also gives you some idea of how the law of attraction and manifestation works. Because the same principles apply here in the physical. If you are trying to manifest something, and you got, let's say you're trying to manifest a new car, and you've got pictures of it on the wall, and you keep looking at it, and you're imagining you're driving it, and you're making verbal affirmations that you already have this car now. present tense active. And if you keep your focus continually on that, you'll find that you will attract that, and that will move into your life as rapidly as it can. Now, if you break your focus and your attention, and it goes off onto this and goes off onto that, which is what normally happens to people, you'll find, of course, it takes a long time to get to you. It might take several months or a couple of years to get to you, depending on what you're trying to manifest. I mean, if you're trying to manifest a new lawnmower, that may come to you in a couple of weeks or earlier, but something a bit bigger may take longer. And a lot of the reasons why things take a long time for most people to manifest is because they keep breaking their focus. If you kept your focus continually on what you're manifesting, it would come into your life a lot faster. So if you put all this together, you start to get a picture of what is happening in your life, how your higher self source works through you, the intimate connection you have, that it is there with you all the time. It is very, very active, proactive on the astral level and in the lucid dreaming levels. It is there, and it is just as active in your physical life if you allow this, if you make space for this. Now, your beliefs come into play here, because you start affirming that you have a new lawnmower, for example, and you say to yourself, I have a beautiful blue lawnmower. You'll feel this tension in your stomach and chest instantly that says, no, you don't. And you say, I have a beautiful blue lawnmower. I cut my lawn with it. It says, no, you don't. You don't really believe that, because your beliefs get in the way. We are like brainwashed in the physical dimension that we believe everything is solid and physical, and certain things have to be done in certain ways. Like if you take a physical device that is broken, an example, about a year or so ago, the fuel gauge in my car broke. It had been broken for a couple of years. I hit a big bump, and it's an off-road vehicle, and it died. I had it checked out by the auto electrician, and yeah, it's completely dead, need to replacing. And I never got around to doing it. And about a year ago, I came home one night and turned the engine off, and I looked at the fuel gauge, which wasn't working. And I had this urge, this intuitive urge to me, and I applied verbal affirmations and intensive visualization on it, saying my fuel gauge works perfectly. And I was visualizing the connection to the engine into the fuel tank, and I say my fuel gauge, my sender unit is perfect. The connections between my fuel gauge and my sender unit in the tank are perfect. And I kept that up intensively for about 90 seconds. And then I turned the car off, got out, and went in the house. I came out the next day and started my car up, and my fuel gauge worked perfectly. It was fixed. And I'm sitting there going, whoa. I could feel this big shift in my belief systems occurring, because I have personal experience with doing it. Now, you absolutely need personal experience in order to do this, and because this is where the power of it comes from, because personal experience is the only thing which will shift that disbelief inside of us that stops it from working. So what we do is we try and use all of our power and techniques and that of doing affirmations and visualizations, and we start manifesting small things. You start manifesting a cup of coffee or a meal or a dinner invitation, something small. And when this happens, and you know, you get a couple of cups of coffee and a couple of dinner invitations, you start to feel, that worked. It kind of worked a little bit, you know, because it's coincidence as well. That might just have happened anyway. But if you keep doing it, you keep manifesting small things, you start to gain personal experience with manifestation. And over a period of time, your belief systems shift, so that when you say to yourself, I have a beautiful blue lawnmower, it works beautifully, instead of getting, no you don't, you get, maybe you do. It starts, that pressure of disbelief starts to ease off, And then we start to manifest more powerfully. And then we start manifesting airline tickets and new homes and cars and money and relationships. And we start also, don't miss the point here, by the way, on manifestation and affirmations there. I mean, you can manifest things, stuff in your life. But the most important thing you can do with this is you can use this for self-healing. Very, very powerful self-healing method. And using the law of attraction for self-healing, probably the most powerful healing you could do. You could use it for healing other people, for helping other people with physical conditions, with psychological conditions. Anything in your life you can use this on to make a difference.
Well, that's amazing. Now, before we do any astral dynamics or astral projections, you talk a lot about, you know, first, the extensive knowledge that you have in energy work and healing and self-healing and building your spiritual development, and that this is very important before you try to astral project. Talk about energy work.
Well, first off, you don't really need to know a lot about astral projection or lucid dreaming in order to do them. They'll often happen spontaneously. Children often, even small children. I started when I was 4 years old, and over a short period of time, I was gallivanting around the neighborhood and having lots of fun. But to take it to a higher level, to actually do something with it, you need to do a little bit of study on it. Energy work helps the process. Meditation, learning how to achieve an altered state of consciousness, is invaluable for this. Because what you want to do is you want to be able to have an astral projection or a lucid dream while you are still fully mentally awake. So you are sitting in your chair, deeply relaxed in an altered state of consciousness, and then you want to trigger the separation. Now, we do this through training the body with some energy work, using my new system of energy work, which is very, very simple to do. And we use these things, get into an altered state of consciousness, which means your mind is still awake, but your body goes to sleep. So your body is physically asleep. Sometimes it'll even snore if you tend to snore. But your mind is still awake and you can still move, albeit very slowly. And now in that state, doing some energy work, stimulating your energy centers and using body awareness energy techniques to trigger the astral projection reflex so that you will experience an astral projection while your mind is awake. And then your mind goes with it and you can experience it and greatly increase your chances of remembering it. Triggering an astral projection is actually very simple. What I just explained then sounds complicated. Achieving a deeply relaxed state, deep, deep physical relaxation, and allowing your physical body to go to sleep and keeping your mind awake. And keeping your mind awake. So, but this is what you do every time you fall asleep, every night. So, this is a very very simple thing. We all do it automatically. You lay there in bed, you turn the light out, and you take a deep breath, and you cuddle down in bed, and you get nice and cozy, and you relax, and you might be thinking about something, and then your thoughts start getting disjointed, and you start to lose track of your thoughts. They start getting a bit silly and disjointed. And next moment, there's a little click, and you fall asleep. You fall asleep, and there's usually a slight falling sensation when you actually fall asleep.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're trying to do in the my class, for example, the Practical Astral Projection Intensive, which is an online course, a 5-week intensive we run on the internet, what we try to do there is to train people to reproduce what they do naturally when you are falling asleep each night, but to do that and keep the mind awake, to go through the same thing, deeply relax the physical body, relax the mind, still the thoughts, relax the mind, and put yourself in that same condition so that you will, your physical body will fall asleep and your mind stays awake. And when that happens, you have an astral projection or a lucid dream. You'll shift into that. And it's a very, very natural thing once you take yourself out of it, because your disbeliefs, it's something new you're doing, shifting into that new state. So there's a lot of internal resistance because we're not used to doing it. Now, if we stop trying to do it, which is the big part of the program, is putting you in that state and then getting you to stop trying, to relax into the process, to get into the right state, the mind awake, body asleep state, and then to relax into it and allow it to happen while keeping your mind awake. So it all fits together. But so it sounds complicated, but it's actually very, very simple. But there is a fair bit to learn in order to do nothing. And there is. It's a lot of practice and training needed to do nothing. Because what are you doing? You're sitting in a chair, you're laying down, and you are actively doing nothing. You are relaxing your body, which means it's doing nothing. It's just going heavier and heavier. You're relaxing your mind, so your thoughts are getting lighter and lighter, so your mind is clear. And in that state, your energy body expands, and you become capable of exiting your body in an astral projection. But so some people take to this like a duck to water, and they'll do it the first time they try it. Most children can do this immediately. Adults, usually, we've developed a fair bit more resistance to this, and so we tend to take a bit more time relearning, or should say unlearning, a lot of bad habits. On that note, Laurie, I forgot to tell you, I'm giving away a free place in my next practical astral projection intensive, and where we teach astral projection and energy work, which is in July, to the first one of your listeners that emails my partner, Bob Felix, at programs@glidewing.com and mentions your show will get a free place in the next workshop.
Very nice.
Yeah. And all of your other listeners that mention your show will get 25% off everything.
Wow. That's wonderful. You talk a lot about lucid dreaming, and I know a lot of people, you know, try to do lucid dreaming. How do we do that? What is the understanding there?
Lucid dreaming is incredible. I would recommend this to most people, to not just to start with, but it is easier to do than astral projection, because what you do in lucid dreaming is you program yourself to become lucid during a dream. So you're missing the falling asleep part, the tricky part of keeping the mind awake while the body falls to sleep. It takes a little bit of practice. But to achieve lucid dreaming, you program yourself to do habitual reality checks. And what a reality check is, it's very simple. And you want to do this like 100 times a day. For example, every time you wash your hands or have a drink of water, anything to do with water, do a reality check. Every time you have a cup of tea or coffee, anything to do with fluid, do a reality check. And a reality check is look around yourself and ask yourself a few simple questions. Is this situation normal? Look at the room. Looks fairly normal. Is this a normal situation? I mean, what's happening around you? Is it normal? Does the room look normal? Can I fly? You know, feel yourself floating out of your chair or legs. And can I put my hand through solid matter? Try and put your hand through the desk in front of you or the wall. Takes a couple of seconds. You know, is this normal? No, feel solid. Everything is normal. But if you do this during your day-to-day life, it might take you days or weeks for this to become habitual, so that every time... A good indicator, by the way, is the time. Every time you look at your watch or a clock or anybody mentions a time, do a reality check, and you'll find you're doing it a couple of dozen times a day. And when this becomes habitual, it will carry over into the dream state, so that when you're having a dream, anybody mentions a time or you see a clock, you will do a reality check. And when you do a reality check in a dream, you find, no, this is not a normal situation because the sky is pink and there's an elephant flying by. Or I've got a bunch of clowns around me dancing and I can put my hand through my desk. I can fly. Various, lots of anomalies there, at which alert you to the fact that you're dreaming. And then you say, wow, I'm dreaming. And you then realize you're dreaming. You become lucid. And you can take control over the dream. And you can do things, you can create things. You have very powerful creative ability in a dream state. You can, for example, if you just imagine the shape of a motor vehicle being there, it will take shape over a couple of seconds. If you imagine there is a lake in front of you, the office will disappear around you and a lake will appear. And you say, no, that's an ocean with a beautiful golden beach. And say these words, make commands when you do this. And say, there is a beautiful ocean in front of me, and an ocean will appear, and it's got a lovely golden beach. And you say, the sand is pure white, and it instantly changes white. And you can start dreamscaping. And you can summon people to you. You can travel to people. There's all kinds of things you can do. It's hugely fun. And it's a very safe environment in the dream state. And it gives you experience with being separate from your body. Even though technically you could say you're still in a part of your own mind, you are existing separately from where your physical body is and acting completely differently. And it's a lot of fun. There's serious sides to it as well. You can do serious work in lucid dreams. And for that matter, I'm certain now, after many years of research and work on this area, that lucid dreaming is actually a mental projection, a projection of the mental body into the mental dimension. It is not just a simple dream. No one has ever defined that. They seem to think that anything to do with the dreaming happens in your head, in your brain. But now, if you look at the expansiveness of mind, that's not really happening. That doesn't really wash. But in the lucid dream state and the dream state, the similarities to projecting on the mental level, which I often do, that they're hugely similar. And so I'm certain that this is what's happening in the dream state, which is also very, very similar to what happens when a person dies. When you die and you leave your body and you slip into the, you could say, the lucid dream state in a very powerful dream on the mental dimension, and then you go through the afterlife process, which is hugely variable. But I think this is all happening on the same level. And most people, by the way, when they die, don't know they've died. It is that real. It is that solid. Life continues on. And, I mean, in the afterlife state, I regularly visit my mother and my father and other family and friends that have died over the years. And most of them do not realize that they have died. In fact, none of them do. Life goes on, and I call in to visit my mother, for example, and she's usually got a friend there, and we'll have a cup of tea and cake and sit around talking. We'll go for a walk, and then a friend will knock at the door and visit. And there's lots of anomalies around, little things, that are inconsistencies there. But everybody there is fully immersed in the illusion of where they are, and often thoroughly enjoying themselves. They don't know they've died. It's not a big, scary place. You know, dying is not some big, scary thing. It is an extension of life. And there's a beautiful flow to life. When your physical body dies and you leave it, it's like being reborn. And you go on into these beautiful realms. Now, sometimes you may have a lot of baggage to process, because what you will find in the afterlife is very much like what happens in a lucid dream or in an astral projection. If you've got a lot of baggage, you'll take that baggage with you, and it will manifest around you. if you've got a phobia about teddy bears, for example, you're terrified about teddy bears, you can't have them in the house. If you're so focused on that because you're so scared of them, when you leave your body, if you have an astral projection or lucid dream, you'll be looking around, oh, I hope there's no teddy bears around here. And next minute you see teddy bears all over the place. So if you die with a troubled mind, with a lot of baggage, you'll tend to manifest all of your pain and suffering around you, which is a part of the process, which allows you, it by through immersion in it, it allows you to process that. It may sound cruel in some cases here, but it's very effective, and that by exposure to certain things, you process it and eventually get over it, and then you move on. You eventually get to a point where, huh, they're only teddy bears, they're stuffed toys, what's the big deal? And you let go of it, and you move on. And again, this is we're looking at something here which is a beautiful process.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about the different astral dimensions?
There's a vast range of astral dimensions, and the same goes into the mental dimension. There's a vast range of them as well. Most people, when you first leave your body in a classic astral projection, you will start out in the real time zone. And the real time zone is, it's my term actually, for, it's like a buffer zone, an area between the astral planes, which bear little to no resemblance to the physical world, and the physical world itself. There's a buffer zone, you could also call it the etheric dimension, where you come out of your physical body, you perceive yourself as exiting it. It's a very visceral sensation. You feel yourself separating from your physical body, and then you can look back and you'll see your physical body sitting in your chair, laying on your bed, and you can move around the physical universe like a ghost in the real world. You can pass through walls, you can fly and see life as it is happening in real time. That's why I call this the real time zone. And beyond this, you get into the lower astral planes, which the first two astral planes are very boring. It's like being in a desert. There's like sand and rocks and not much there. But when you get to the third astral plane, you'll find that is heavily populated. There are millions of people there milling around. And a lot of these people are dreaming. It's like dreaming. They're sleep projecting. Because when you fall asleep, you automatically, your dream mind becomes active on the mental level, mental dimension, and your astral body projects out automatically while your physical body sleeps. So you could say your conscious awareness that you would use to animate your physical body has gone to sleep, and that has divided its resources between your astral projected double and your dream mind. Now, keep in mind, we're not set up to automatically remember these experiences, even though they happen every night. Everybody has these every night. We don't normally remember them. A big part of that is the higher self, actually, because it filters these memories out of us, so we don't normally remember them. We'll remember an occasional dream, but most of them, particularly the astral projection side, is filtered. Those memories are filtered by the higher self. Mm-hmm. It, by default setting, you could say that we not normally want to have those sort of memories because they'd be very ungrounding for us, and we have to stay grounded here in the physical dimension and function here. This is, you know, life we live. And if you were seeing spirits and having astral projections, that, you know, your groundedness in the physical reality would get a little bit munted and you get a little bit disconnected from life. So the default setting is not to remember astral projection. And you can change that. One of the things that helps learning how to astral project more than probably anything is to use affirmations and intentions on that. If you make regular affirmations that I project out of my body happily and safely, I love to astral project, I love to leave my body and travel the astral planes, I love to remember my astral projections, those are affirmations that you would use, present tense, active, as if you already were doing this. It has to be present tense. And beyond that, the first astral planes, as I said, they're heavily populated. It's like a gigantic mall with millions of people rushing around doing this and that. And you walk along a couple of hundred yards of mall, and then it breaks into a park, and then you find a piece of New York there, and there's a lake and an ocean, and then there's a bit of China there. And it's a higgly-piggly area where it's like bits and pieces of the world have been... You know, it's like going through a lot of magazines and cutting out lots of pictures and then mixing them up at random and sticking them to your wall. That's what the lower astral dimensions are like. They're not bad places. They're just fairly meaningless places. People are going around. They're shopping. They're sightseeing. They're, a lot of people, you'll look around and see they're standing there asleep. Because they've come out of body and maybe their physical body is too active, their dream mind is too active, because you're sharing the same resource of consciousness. And if you've got two or three of you active at one time, if you are focused strongly in one of these aspects, let's say your dream mind is having a powerful experience, then that drains all the energy from your astral projected double and it will tend to fall asleep. If your astral projected double is having a interesting experience, that will tend to drain your dream mind. And in a case where these are both active, you'll find if you wake up in your physical body, you may find that you are paralyzed and unable to move for a short time before you reintegrate. That's quite a common phenomenon.
Do you want to talk about the silver cord?
The silver cord, excuse me. The silver cord, there's been a lot of debate over that. You'll find some authors and teachers in the spiritual field say it doesn't exist. It's a fantasy. Other people say it does. Traditionally, they say it does. Metaphysically, if you go into the realms of magic and that, you'll find there are several cords, the silver cord just being one of them. I mean, there's a cord coming from each of the chakras, and when you have an astral projection or even lucid dream, you'll find a cord coming from each of your major chakras, your major energy centers, is connected to that in some way. Now, I first observed the silver cord when I was about 4 years old, 5 years old. I saw it many times when I was a child. And I'd read nothing, had zero exposure. We didn't even have television. About the nearest I'd been to any fantasy was Bambi or Batman as a child. So that was something quite new. Now, I observed that many times and usually seen as coming from the navel area. It's a sparkling silvery cord. It looks to be about as thick as your thumb. And it looks like it's made of static. You know, like the static on a TV?
Mm-hmm.
When it's turned off station, that sparkly sort of movement sort of thing going on there. A sparkling cord. And now, some people today say if you see that, it's just a bias. It's a hallucination because you're expecting to see it. But apart from my own observations as a child, I've had lots of people and children bring that out of the thousands of case histories I've dealt with over the years. I've had many people come to me and made original observations. They had no idea what this was. And some people had just gone on the internet and had put some random search words in. They put in a silver cord because they'd seen a silver cord coming from their body or something. And they put in some descriptive words and come up with my website and eventually got hold of me by email or something. And so I've seen enough people come to me completely cold or fresh with no bias there to know that I think that this, you will sometimes see this. If you don't know about it or you don't deliberately look for it, you will occasionally notice it. If you deliberately look for it, you will usually see it, particularly if you're in the astral planes. you won't see it so much in the real time zone. It's not so noticeable there, although there is always something energetically connecting you to your physical body. Keeping in mind, your physical body, when you have an astral projection, is never ever left empty. You do not leave. The old way of thinking, until I published my book, Astral Dynamics, was that when you have an astral projection, your physical body was left empty, an empty shell or husk. And that's a very disturbing thought. And you start thinking, well, what if I'm out of my body? What if something came along and stole my body or possessed me or, you know, took control of my body? Well, I could be locked out. It could be dangerous. What if I can't find my way back? What if I can't get back into my body? All of these questions arise. But my work has shown very, very clearly that when you have an astral projection, your mind splits. I call it the mind split effect. At the exact moment of separation, as your astral body begins to separate from your physical body. And what happens then is your energy body generates a copy of you, an energetic copy of you and your mind and your memories. And this copy is like the RAM in a computer, is generated and then separated. Now, the moment it separates, and some people hear a very distinct click at the moment of separation and various other phenomena, but that is generated and it behaves like the RAM in a computer. It will travel around energetically and it is thinking and experiencing independently. And it perceives itself to be you. I mean, you perceive yourself to be you. But you could also still be awake meditating, and this often happens during meditation. You're meditating there, and you're still thinking and experiencing and carrying on with your meditation while you have an astral projection in progress. So you don't actually leave your physical body, but you get an energetic copy of you leaves the body. Now, if something were to happen to that, let's say from something I can't imagine, severed your silver cord or destroyed your astral body, you would go on as normal. You haven't lost anything. You've lost a memory of what happened while that aspect of you, that energy, is out of body. But you would recover completely. You might be a little bit low on energy for a couple of days, maybe a little bit tired, but your physical body would recover its substance that it lost, its energy, fairly quickly, and life would go on, and you wouldn't know anything about it. But that is theoretical. I've never known that to happen. I've never had that happen to me that I know of. And if it ever did happen, theoretically, you would never know about it. You would not know this. Interesting. In meditation, and often in led meditations in groups, if you ask people the right questions, you'll find, if you know the signs to look for, that quite a number, sometimes all of the people in that meditation group, experience an astral projection exit during the meditation that they're not aware of. The typical symptoms are, and most people that meditate regularly would have had this happen to them without knowing what it is, you're in the middle of a meditation and you feel this tingling, exciting energy rapidly in a split second comes up your legs and up through your back and spine, and you feel this tingling surge of energy, and you'll think to yourself, oh, something's happening, and then it stops, and you go on your meditation thinking, oh, I wonder what that was. A few minutes later, 5, 10, 15 minutes later, you will feel another tingling surge of energy rapidly coming up your legs in a split second and up again through your back, and you think, oh, something's happening again. And it feels like just an energy tingle, a bit like adrenaline or excitement. But it's quite a noticeable tingling visceral sensation in the body. And what has actually happened here is the first time you felt that tingling rush up through your body, you had an astral projection exit. The second time you had this tingling rush come through your body, that was the astral projection re-entry and reintegration. Now, this happens with a failed memory download. So you don't get the memory of the astral projection, because regardless of what it was doing and how interesting it was, you are still awake, you are doing your meditation, you may be following your voice, leading you on a guided meditation, and that experience memory is automatically downloading into your conscious memory. That doesn't leave any room for another memory stream of a completely separate experience happening for the same time period. So that is locked out. And you've also got the higher self automatically filtering those sorts of experience so that to keep you grounded here in the physical. So for lots of little reasons here, you'll find we don't get the memories of them, even though we're experiencing astral projection all the time. Everybody does it whenever they sleep. Whenever you meditate, most people, if you meditate for half an hour or more, you will experience an astral projection exit once you get into an altered state of consciousness. An altered state, if you're not familiar with that, it's when you enter an altered state, it's heralded by a mild falling sensation and a heaviness. You feel this heavy wave come over your physical body. Your body starts to feel heavy. And once you get that heaviness, you're in an altered state of consciousness where your physical body is in the first level of sleep. So in that level there, you will produce an astral projected double. Now, it will often pop out of you unnoticed, but there is usually a tingle of energy and a little bit of a falling sensation associated with it. Now, you'll often get that a number of times during a meditation because you may have more than one astral projection exit and re-entry. This may happen several times. But every time you lose the memory of it because it's not downloading.
Right.
Now, part of the my books and the online courses that we work on this in PAPI, we call it affectionately, the Practical Astral Projection Intensive, we try and train people to work with these things, to allow these things, to go with these things, so that when you have an astral projection exit, you maximize your chances of downloading the memory using various techniques and methods, ways of holding yourself in a state of being, memory recall exercises, various techniques. And through this process, we've learned that we can train people to begin capturing after projection memories. And it's something that can be learned.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robert Bruce, you've been a delight. Very much enjoyed this. It's very entertaining as well as very informative as to, you know, how we can achieve these altered states and to make these connections for ourselves. And I certainly hope that people take advantage of this course because I found it very extensive and very well.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. We're very proud of it. It's really wonderful.
Mm-hmm. It is. So why don't you tell people how they can get a hold of you?
Well, you can get hold of me through my website, which is astraldynamics.com, and through my blog, which is blog.astraldynamics.com, and go to my website, and you'll find the Hall of Learning, which is my online school, which I founded with my partner, Bob Felix. And, go through there, and you'll find all the information about the course. Or just email programs@glidewing.com. GLIDEWING.
Perfect.
programs@glidewing.com. And my partner, the wonderful Bob Felix, will email you the links and all the information. We have a free introductory course which people can take if they just want to check out the facilities. It's heavily video streaming based, so a lot of the units you'll find on there are streamed video, which you can, it's very user friendly. There's no set class times. You can attend the classes whenever you like, replay the classes as necessary. There's streamed video. We have live interaction through forums and messaging and that and chats, and so there's a lot of contact with the facilitators, and but everything is replayable, very user friendly. And it all works beautifully. You just need broadband.
There you go. Well, again, thank you very much. It's been a great pleasure, and I hope to have you back.
My pleasure, Laurie.
Okay. Take care.
Be well. Bye.
Bye.